go ahead and call the Senate Judiciary Committee to order. I am present for the record, Senator Lisa McGuire, my vice chairman, Senator John Coghill, Senator Mia Costello, and Senator Bill Wilikowski. Senator Peter Machicki is presenting a bill in another committee, so he's excused, and he'll pop back in if he can. We have one item on the agenda today, and that is the matter of CS for Senate Bill Number 30, Version I. We have Amy Saltzman and Jordan Schilling from our two offices that are going to walk us through the sectional. And then I wanted to let members know who else was invited for testimony today so that if you're thinking about your questions, you can sort of compartmentalize them. Hillary Martin, who is the legal drafter, she'll be online. Nancy Mead, who's general counsel to the Alaska court system. Tracy Wallenberg, who's with the Public Defender Agency, she'll be online. Casey Schroeder, who's here in the office, thank you, Casey, with the State of Alaska Department of Law. Bruce Schulte, who we know well, with the Coalition for Responsible Cannabis Legislation, he'll be online. Kelly Howell, who is with the Department of Public Safety, Administrative Services Director, so that's your public safety person. And then Jeff Pickett, who is our attorney for this committee and the Admin Web Review Committee, who's also been hard at work on this legislation as well. So just for anybody who might have been tuning in for the very compelling revisers bill, Senate Bill 35. It never draws any testimony or anything, but in case you were here for that, we're going to bring that up Friday, and it's our intent to move it out then. So without further ado, I'd like to ask Amy Saltzman and Jordan Schilling to come up and just thank them as well. I was just leaning over to Senator Coghill and said, our staff feels like they've been here already for a session. And I think in hours that they've put into work on trying to put this initiative into law, it's probably been what you would do in a 90-day session. So thank you again to both of you for your hard work and the great sectional. And if you just put yourself on the record, please.
I'm Amy Saltzman, staff to Senator McGuire.
And Jordan Schilling, staff to Senator Coghill.
Madam Chair, would you just like me to start?
Yes. Okay.
And Madam Chair, before you start, maybe I can just tell the committee what I asked them to do. I'd ask them to read through the first two or three sections to show how they conform, but it can be my expectation that they're so common that we can go right on to the new crimes, which is Section 45. But I thought people need to hear how this fits in, so the first two or three sections, if it's okay with you and okay with Amy.
Sure. Thank you very much, Senator Coghill. And then just to be clear, on version I, we had a motion and adopted that version before us, and all members should have an updated packet that has the sectional analysis complete on the front. Okay.
Okay, so starting with Section 1, AS-0230-030B, operation of an aircraft under the influence. So this is a section that relates to a person and operating an aircraft with a crew member or a passenger that's intoxicated. So that language was only including alcohol or controlled substances, so we added marijuana. In Section 2, AS-0416-050, possession, control, or consumption by a person under the age of 21. This requires the court to prohibit the use of alcohol as a condition of probation, and we've added marijuana. Section 3, amends AS-0545-100, duties and responsibilities of skiers, prohibiting the use of a tramway, ski slope, or trail under the influence of, and before it was alcohol, and so we added marijuana. Section number 4, AS-0868-270, grounds for denial, suspension, or revocation, and these are for,
Senator Coghill.
Madam Chair, so this sectional gives the chapter title heading in each one, which I'm very grateful for. So, for example, the grounds for denial on suspension or revocation is a Title 8. You move all the way down to Section 7, which is abatement of places for certain acts, abatement of certain places. So I think if people are interested in knowing how and where it affects the individuals, the people who, these two, who put together this sponsor, this sectional, took the heading of each chapter so that people can see very clearly what law it affects and what title it falls under. So with that, I don't know that we need to read through title, but I wanted to show, as Amy read the first three or four sections, that it really is conforming to the alcohol statute. That doesn't say that there isn't going to be some substantive issues that we're going to have to deal with in those sections, but at least this way, with a sectional, people know where they're going to look at those things. And so with that, I would ask that we move past the first 44 sections, which are just like that,
yep.
Unless the committee feels that they really need to read each one of them off. And I see Senator Wilkowski has a point on that.
Excellent. And just to clarify one other point before I go to Senator Wilkowski and Senator Costello, the reason that these changes are being made in this as conforming parts to where we prohibit alcohol is because we have eliminated marijuana as a controlled substance. So it wasn't that marijuana wasn't already controlled in these areas. It was. It's simply that we're now regulating it in the same way that we're regulating alcohol. And so I just want to put that on the record as an overarching point. You might say, when you look at grounds for denial, suspension, revocation of a nursing license and say, we didn't have any testimony on that. Where did that come from? And it's simply because we're now removing marijuana from the Controlled Substances Act and putting it in and regulating it the way we are alcohol. So it will be a regulated substance, like alcohol, but not a controlled substance. Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you. I don't have any problem with Senator Coghill's proposal, but there may be a couple sections where I think there's some concern. And I'll just raise the issues, like Section 4, for instance. And I just want to bring it out. Maybe we can hash it out a little bit. But you're talking about revoking a license or suspending a license. In number 3, we say habitually abuses alcoholic beverages or marijuana. And so how would this apply to someone who is using medical marijuana, for instance? And I guess it's how you define the term abuse, but if someone's using it every day, would that be considered abuse? And I think there are sections throughout here up until Section 50. Another section, just picking one totally out of the blue here, Section 26, for instance, a judicial officer can require a person to refrain from the consumption of marijuana. Again, a person's using medical marijuana prescribed for medical purposes. We're now allowing a judge to take that away from them. And so I just think there's some sections here where it's a little bit different than alcohol abuse or other drug abuse. And maybe you can comment on that. And I don't know if there's a way to differentiate in some of these sections.
That's an excellent point. So, Senator Wilkowski, for the public that's watching, we've got a sectional in front of us that is treating marijuana like alcohol, and his overarching question is there's another initiative that passed prior to this that allowed for the use of medical marijuana, and the legislature never fully implemented that law. So how would these particular uses interplay with medical marijuana?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, that's a great question. I believe that the defense that's in this bill and in statute that covers medical marijuana would cover that, but I would like to defer to Hillary Martin, our legal director, or Department of Law.
Yes. So I'll go to Hillary. Do you have an answer for that question?
This is Hillary Martin with Legislative Legal Services. There is a defense in the bill for medical marijuana. The initiative itself just says that it's not intending to change anything to do with medical marijuana. Previously, when marijuana was a controlled substance, you had these same issues with what do you do about medical marijuana. I think it's still a bit of an open question, but the defense would at least cover anyone who's charged with marijuana crimes.
Can you point us, Hillary, to that particular page in the bill, the section?
Yes, it's on page 37. And that section, just so everyone is aware, is simply moving the affirmative defense that already exists in statute.
Yes.
Into 17b8.
Okay. Okay. Senator Wilkowski, just to ensure, Senator Wilkowski.
Well, yeah, and I'm aware of that, but that seems to me to apply to prosecutions, and the sections that I pointed out were Section 4, for instance, which deals with revoking a person's license. That wouldn't apply to that. Correct me if I'm wrong, and the section on giving a judge the ability to require a person to refrain from using marijuana. I mean, I think most judges would differentiate, but we're, again, giving a judge the right to take away your ability to use something that you have a constitutional right or a legal right to use for medicinal purposes. So I don't think that would apply. Am I incorrect in that?
Ms. Martin?
Senator Wilkowski, through the chair, I think you're correct. I think it's a problem that existed before. Previously, a judge could have ordered someone to refrain from using controlled substances. I think it was a problem that existed before we made these changes, and currently the bill doesn't fix that issue.
So, and that is a policy call that any member could make, which would be a little bit similar to what we've already done between the first version of this draft and this draft. We moved it from a defense, and we simply clarified the places you could use it with caveats and took it out of the controlled substances section and made it a regulated substance. That said, if an individual lawmaker wanted to go back in and insert in certain places, notwithstanding the use of medical marijuana, that would be an amendment. That would be a philosophical debate and discussion, as opposed to keeping Section 1738-300, which is the affirmative defense. So it is certainly an open question, and would be something that members could add if they wanted to as a policy call. Senator Costello?
And thank you, through the chair. So my question has to do with removing marijuana as a Schedule 6A controlled substance in the statute, as you know, that's what we're doing, that's what the initiative is doing. And so that happens in Section 23, Section 131, and 155. But in the sectional, it mentions that Section 18 removes it as a Schedule 6A, it removes the reference. However, when I'm reading the bill on page 13, lines 13 through 16, it retains the Schedule 6A reference. And so if we're removing that from the statute, how then can we, in all other places in the legislation, it refers to marijuana just by its common name, marijuana. So could you explain why we're retaining it in this section?
Through the chair, Senator Costello, that is something that we've brought up several times. This section it's repealed in the back, and so they've left it in for drafting purposes. And I know Hillary can give a better explanation than that, but it is a drafting issue.
Ms. Martin?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Costello, how this works in criminal law is if we're repealing an entire paragraph or like in the case of page 13, line 13, those go in the repealer section. I realize it looks a little odd, but this is to preserve the numbering of statutes. If we just bracketed that language out, the sections will all get renumbered, and that can become an issue in the criminal law with the court records and looking at potentially previous convictions that someone has. If the numbers all get renumbered, then the crimes look different for previous convictions. So what we do is if a whole paragraph or subparagraph or section is coming out, then that goes in the repeal. The reason Section 18 is in there is because on page 14, line 13, there's a place where we can't just take out a whole paragraph. And so that has to be done physically. But otherwise, in criminal law, when we're drafting, that's how it's done, those sections, because the whole paragraph goes into the repeal section.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Ms. Martin. Can you point me to the page and area where we then see that it's the language is repealed?
Yes, Senator Costello, here at the chair. It is the last page, page 91, section 160.
Okay. Any further?
No, thank you.
Okay.
Okay, Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Cotto.
Just a drafting question. So in reading the statutes, when you come to that chapter, it's just going to have a bracket say repealed?
Senator Cotto, who's chair, that's correct. So after the bill passes, it'll later just say repealed.
All right, thank you.
Excellent. That really helps. Thank you very much, Hillary, Ms. Martin, for that. Okay, please continue. Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you. And if we're skipping ahead,
yes.
I did have a question
okay,
on
great.
Section 42, and where this page 25, this provision says, Commissioner of Health and Social Services shall provide for education programs designed to prevent and deter the use abuse of alcohol. And we're adding the term, right now it applies to controlled substances. We're adding the terms alcohol and marijuana, which I support. I think it's a good idea. I'm just curious if we're generating a fiscal note by doing so.
Through the Chair, Senator Wilikowski, we haven't heard back yet. We're hoping it won't. We don't know yet, but I'll find out very soon.
Okay.
Senator Costello.
Thank you. And I also have a question on this section. So in a memo from the governor outlining some of the things that he would like to see or his comment on the legislation, he mentions that Colorado has a program called Good to Know, and we've been offered the opportunity as a state to sort of adopt that same effort. And so when we looked into what that program is, it actually includes information to the public on what the law is now. And when I read through this, there are there's a lot in here about education to prevent the use and deter the abuse of alcohol and marijuana, but I was wondering if at some point the committee and with the chair's support would entertain a conversation about expanding that to just educate the public about what's legal, what isn't, just so that we have that out there, because I think that while many Alaskans are following this really closely, and certainly Bruce Schulte and his organization, they're following this probably and he's listening, but a lot of Alaskans aren't. And how will they learn what the laws are so that they don't find themselves in a position where they're doing something unlawful because they didn't wait until the regs are in place or things like that? So I just wanted to throw that out there as something that I tagged as something we might want to look at.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Okay. Anything? Yes, Senator Wilikowski? Okay. Anything further before we go to Section 45 from any members of the committee? Okay. Section 45.
Jordan Schilling, staff to Senator Coghill. Section 45, and perhaps Amy, you can help me with this, adds in language that was approved by the voters in the initiative. With the exception of the phrase, notwithstanding any other provision of law. And you'll find a few instances in the bill, really the next five sections, where we have decided to not include that clause. And I know that Hillary has some further thoughts on why that clause is could be problematic.
Okay. Ms. Martin?
Generally speaking, notwithstanding the provision of law, it's a phrase we try and avoid in the statutes. It can create confusion and conflicts. If the legislature passes something that potentially conflicts with what's in this statute, that means this language cancels it out. So that can be problematic. It can lead to questions about what does apply and what doesn't, something that could potentially be left to a court to decide. And so that's the main reason why that language has come out.
I'm sure.
Yes, Senator Coghill.
So the initiative had the language, notwithstanding any other provision of law. And that's as we went down to draft this, and we were doing a carve-out, that seemed to be more appropriate under that condition because we still had the Schedule 1A. Is that a good understanding of that? Whatever the schedule is, 6A, sorry.
Senator Conso, through the chair, that's probably a part of the reason why that language has been there, because the initiative did not do anything to the criminal laws at all. And so that language would have canceled out or nullified potentially the criminal laws and the criminal penalties associated with these actions.
Okay, any other questions from members on that? Okay, please continue.
So starting with Section 50 is really where the meat of this bill is contained. The next following pages creates four new crimes, really, misconduct involving marijuana in four different degrees. So misconduct involving marijuana in the first degree is simply if a person, and by the way, this is a Class A misdemeanor, which I believe carries a sentence up to a year in prison and $10,000 fine. It's for possessing marijuana with an aggregate weight of more than 4 ounces, possessing 25 or more plants, manufacturing or delivering more than an ounce, and there is some discussion on the word deliver. Deliver any amount to a person under 21 years of age who is not a patient registered under 1737, that's the medical marijuana statutes. Manufacturing what is known as butane hash, it's really really any dangerous form of concentrating marijuana. And marijuana establishments allowing a person under 21 to enter and remain in a facility or allow the use of marijuana or deliver marijuana to a person under 21. So all of that conduct is a Class A misdemeanor.
Okay, and just to confirm, you guys have your little field manuals in your book, but a Class A misdemeanor is a fine up to $10,000 and a possible jail time of 0 to 1 year.
Senator Cahill. So this is probably a good place to start the discussion. My expectation is the way the drafting is, 4 ounces is because of the case that we keep talking about that is a Raven and beyond. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Coghill, Hillary and I discussed this briefly over the weekend. A little bit of question as to which case seems to allow you to have up to 25 plants. Cursory search online makes it appear that Raven allows that. Yeah. And so that's kind of how we landed on the 25 number. It's not an arbitrary number, and it's a number also that is used in the misconduct involving controlled substance statutes.
So we got 4 ounces, which is, at this point, is permitted in home use.
Correct.
And you have how many plants that are permitted in home right now?
Well, in some of these other misconduct statutes that we'll talk about, it's actually a violation to have from 7 to 24 plants. 25 and beyond is where the misdemeanor conduct begins.
Okay. So that's how you arrived at the number. Senator Wilkowski.
A different point.
Okay.
This is the start of the discussion.
Yep.
This is the floor, basically. So,
yep.
Senator Wilkowski.
On page 30, lines 1 through 3, where this is a Class A misdemeanor if you're not registered for manufacturing marijuana through a solvent-based extraction method using a substance other than vegetable glycerin. Is there a reason why we're not including water-based extraction in that section?
Senator Wilkowski, through the chair, that has been brought up by some other offices, and I think we're looking into whether water is considered a solvent, and I don't think that the initiative sponsors or anyone else intends to exclude water. We're just trying to exclude the solvents that might be flammable.
So I guess it may be a question to Hillary, Ms. Martin, is that the way language is written, or maybe if you can answer this, does it include water-based extraction in here, or is it something we need to change the language on?
Senator Wilkowski, through the chair, I don't know the answer. Hillary might.
Ms. Martin?
Through the chair, right now the language is solvent-based extraction. Solvent is not defined. I think it would be a question whether, I think there's a possibility that water could be included. It's not clear.
Okay. So probably a good idea to clear that up, in your opinion, if we intend to.
If you want to make it clear that people can use water-based extraction methods, it's probably best to include it to make it clear.
Okay. Thank you.
Excellent. Okay. Further questions on continuing down Section 50 on misconduct involving marijuana in the first degree. Okay, then let's move to second degree.
I'm sorry.
Senator Coghill.
It takes a while to get my trifocals
focused. That's okay.
Focus.
No problem.
So in that that would go to the question, Section 50 and 51, and that is solid waste, because we're saying butane hash. What I understand is that is a manufacturing process that, if it's done in-home, is volatile. And do we need to define it there as well? I mean, you know, and what section is that?
Ms. Martin, can you answer that?
I'm sorry, I didn't quite understand. Are you asking if we should just define solvent-based, or?
No, I just want to know, Mr. Chair, if I might. Thank you, Hillary. It just said in the sectional, the misconduct involving in the first degree is if you're manufacturing butane hash, and I haven't been able to lay my eyes on it. But maybe Jordan had, it looks like he has the line number.
Yeah, through the Chair, Senator Coghill, the bill specifies that those that are registered or licensed aren't prohibited from using solvent-based extractions. We just didn't clarify that in the sectional.
Got it. Okay. All right.
Okay.
Thank you. Hillary, you got the question answered for you.
Okay. So now let's go to 1738-210.
So this is the second degree of misconduct involving marijuana. And you commit the crime of MIM in the second degree, which is a Class B misdemeanor, if you possess 7 to 24 plants. So I misspoke earlier. That is a Class B misdemeanor between that range. Or if you are unlicensed and deliver more than 1 ounce of marijuana and 6 immature plants, or 1 ounce or less for remuneration or monetary gain, or up to 6 immature plants for monetary gain, or just selling any amount of marijuana without a license.
Okay, and a Class B misdemeanor is up to a maximum of $2,000 of a fine and a maximum of 90 days, but anywhere between 0 to 90 days, potentially jail time. Any questions on that section? Okay, we'll hear a testimony on it. Let's now move to 1738-220.
So this is misconduct involving marijuana in the third degree. And this is a violation. And it covers manufacturing marijuana in a location where the plants are in public view. That's without the use of binoculars or aircraft or other optical aids. That language was pulled directly from the initiative.
Okay.
Or in a location that's not secure from unauthorized access, or on property that is either not yours, or if it's not yours, you must have consent from the property owner.
So like a renter. This is the landlord-renter situation.
Sure.
Okay.
It's also a violation if you are under 21 and you attempt to purchase marijuana with false identification or, you know, otherwise misrepresent your age. Also a violation if you are under 18 and possess, use, or display 1 ounce or less of marijuana.
Got it, Chair?
Yes, Senator Coghill.
Does this fall in line with the statutory provisions of alcohol under the same circumstance?
Through the Chair, Senator Coghill, it doesn't. This would be one of the examples where we've deviated from how we treat alcohol.
Yeah.
Simply because with minors possessing alcohol under 18, the third time it occurs, it becomes a Class B misdemeanor, third and subsequent.
Okay. Interesting. Okay. Any further questions on that point? Senator Wilkowski.
What's the punishment under this section?
So it's a violation, which is a maximum of $500 and no jail time.
And then second and third times?
The exact same.
Same.
Okay. Senator Costello.
Thank you. And through the Chair, so in terms of the fine and the record, since we're dealing with minors here, how would they be treated as minors? So it would not go on their record?
Through the Chair, violations are written so that you are treated the same way as an adult. And so we definitely had a lot of discussion about this, and I think that Nancy Mead from the courts would be the best person to really kind of walk through all the different options there are. There are ways to seal or have, I'll just let her actually talk
about. That's an excellent question. Nancy, why don't you come forward and explain so that committee members know this has been a topic of conversation in our office as well about the general idea we want to move towards is violation versus a Class B or Class A, you know, obviously Class A, but Class B misdemeanor. Because the assumption is what you want to do is divert behavior. You know, they're young and you want to try to send them the other way and go the way of alcohol. But there are some interesting things about how these get noticed and how we can do the record. So, Nancy, if you want to put yourself on the record. And
thank you, Madam Chairman. For the record, my name is Nancy Mead, General Counsel for the Alaska Court System. And to address the questions that were just raised, the court, first of all, is neutral on the bill and takes no position as policy-wise. With respect to keeping some records confidential, which sounds like that might be the topic here, if there are crimes which in this draft, the misconduct involving marijuana in the first and second degree, they're misdemeanors, so they are crimes. If a person is charged with a crime and they're under 18, they are in the juvenile delinquency world. Juvenile delinquency cases are confidential. They don't go on court view. The documents are not available to the public. So somebody under 18 charged with MIM-1 or MIM-2 under this would not have their name on court view, if that's the specific concern, I think. Somebody who is charged with a violation, and under this draft of the bill, MIM-3 and 4 are violations. Violations are minor offenses. They're charged on tickets usually, just like a traffic ticket or a fishing game ticket. You get handed the ticket by the law enforcement person. And under this bill, the Supreme Court is required to make a bail schedule allowing people to pay their fine amount on that ticket by mail, or actually most people do it online with their Visa card through the court system. And those violations, which are termed minor offenses for court processing reasons, are public. And they are not confidential. And further, if you're under 18, it is my understanding that Division of Juvenile Justice, which prosecutes juvenile delinquency cases, does not have jurisdiction to prosecute or authority to prosecute violations. Their authority is to prosecute crimes. So the upshot would be that no matter your age, if the legislature makes it a violation, it would not be covered by Division of Juvenile Justice, and the minor would be treated like an adult. And the real upshot is their name would be on court view. Those cases would not be confidential, unless, of course, you decide to somehow make them confidential, and then they would be.
Okay. Senator Costello.
Thank you. So if I understand you correctly, the way this bill is written, if a 17-year-old gets a misdemeanor involving marijuana with no crime associated with it, that becomes public. But if a 16-year-old is involved, has a misdemeanor involving marijuana and commits a crime, that then becomes a purview that is then confidential. So your privacy is actually protected more if you commit a crime. And I just want to, I'm just a little uncomfortable with, you know, we're one of just a few states that are moving in this direction, and I'm just uncomfortable, and I think we should revisit whether or not we want to be sending our young people out with records that could affect their future involving the substance. And as a parent, you know, I'm very concerned about that, but both in protecting young people and also having the law be appropriate for, you know, for whatever the, you know, whatever the action is. So I find that interesting.
And to respond through the chair, Senator Costello, it is the case if, I mean, a misdemeanor is a crime, so anyone charged with a crime, which would be the misdemeanors MIM-1 and MIM-2, they would be, quote, protected in that their records are confidential. Again, we're talking about people under 18 only. And if you're charged with a violation and you're 17, your records are not confidential. The legislature can change that. That's just the way things are now. So right now, a 17-year-old who gets a speeding ticket is on court view with, you know, case suffix MO, minor offense. And that's the way it is. There's a juvenile delinquency provision in your bill on page 81, it looks like there is a provision that says these are the things that minors are treated like an adult for, and you can see they're all minor offenses, including alcohol offenses, by the way. But if you want, the legislature could draft language to make certain violations confidential. I don't think you can do it by putting them into juvenile delinquency world, because in my view is that the Division of Juvenile Justice doesn't have authority to begin a case that really begins with a ticket.
Absolutely. Yes, Senator.
Thank you for that.
Senator Wilkowski.
So I just want to clarify then, if this were to pass as written, and there's a 16-year-old who gets a misdemeanor involving a marijuana ticket, I don't know the language because I'm not an attorney or a doctor or what have you.
Okay.
You're saying that the record that's public would say minor offense. It would not say involving marijuana, or would it?
Through the chair, Senator Costello, I think you're understanding it. Let me just try to nuance that just a little bit. If this 17-year-old got a ticket, meaning it's a violation, so it would be a MIM 3 or MIM 4 is all we're talking about. Those are the violations. Those cases do appear on court view, and your case number ends in the suffix MO. They're called a minor offense. Not minor because they're under 17, but minor because they're less substantial than a major offense. So that's a little bit confusing. But minor offenses are all have the suffix MO, and it has the same case number look as a traffic ticket or a fish and game ticket. But let me say, when you drill down through court, if you click on that and go further in, you would see what the charged offense is. So I don't want to mislead you and say that nobody could find out that was a marijuana minor offense as opposed to a speeding minor offense.
Madam Chair, if
yes,
I might.
Yes, Senator Coghill.
A misdemeanor is a crime. A violation is not.
Yep.
And so, just to make that abundantly clear.
And that's right. But Senator Costello is on to exactly the concern we had in our office. That you certainly, in a way, even though a violation is less money and it's not a crime, the fact that it's on court view, which is a whole other subject in another bill, may be a disproportionate penalty when compared to someone who's committed the higher crime that actually is a crime and then gets the opportunity to not have that on court view. So I think it's something that I would like this committee to consider, because it's something I've asked Amy and Jordan to really think about. And what Nancy, as general counsel to the court, has come back and said is it's a policy call. And if you would like to add language in the bill that makes it clear that these violations for minors are to be held confidential, we can do that. And I think that's worth considering. Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I agree. I think this body, the legislative body, has recognized the damage that just simply being on court view has to a person's reputation. With the legislation we passed last year, it was vetoed, but I know it's back, and my guess is we're probably going to pass something similar again. So, and it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense to me that for more serious crimes, you actually are it's not public, and yet for this minor crime, we're making public, and it's on someone's record for the rest of their life. 50 years later, they go for a job, and someone looks on court view, and they see that it's there. And I don't know if marijuana is a barrier crime for anything else. Do you know? And maybe someone else here can answer that, but I'd be curious.
That's what this bill is all about. I'm sorry.
Well, is it a barrier? This is a barrier crime for future employment, is my question, on a federal level.
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, I don't exactly know the answer to that. There's a subgroup of the Criminal Justice Commission that is trying to look at the many barrier crimes that exist, and I don't know that off the top of my head. They're collecting that information now.
Thank you.
It's a very good point, and particularly in light of, and we'll hear later on from some federal folks, but because it still is treated differently at the federal level, that could be. Senator Coghill.
Thank you, and I probably misspoke. This is not totally what this bill is about. This bill is aligning it with alcohol statutes for the most part, which has its own barriers, and so that's probably a better way of saying it. However, I'm going to take a little contrarian position on this. I think what we have here is the transition of trying to think of marijuana as a controlled substance over against a regulated substance. And we're always going to think of marijuana as more damaging, and yet the initiative people have said to us, no, it's like alcohol. You treat it like alcohol. And the reproofs of life, in my view, this is the John Coghill view, if youngsters get caught and they're ticketed, that reproof has a significant slap to it. And if, whether it's alcohol or marijuana or any other controlled substance, then I think at this point when it's a violation, that is the time to get their attention. And if they know that it's going to be like alcohol, immediately available, that mom and dad are going to see this, then maybe they have the controlled substance mindset, but we're at the place where if it's going to be a violation, I think you bear the reproof there. If it's going to be a crime, I think under all the criminal circumstances, we protect them because they're innocent until proven guilty. That's not necessarily true of the violation. A violation, the judgment call is made right there. And so, I mean, you can fight it in court, but generally speaking, we have put it at that level where it says, this can be handled probably outside of court unless you want to take it to court. And so, I mean, you still have the right, but we've, as a society, we've said, no, this is going to be a lower level discussion. And to me, the reproofs of life for youngsters need to be there. And so, yes, it's going to be on court view, but if it says MO after it, you know, it's a reproof, but I don't think it has the damning thing that, say, a criminal penalty would. And so I'm just playing the advocate position here because I understand whether it's alcohol or marijuana, if there's no consequence, then there's no consequence, and we get more of it. So I'm just saying it out loud.
Very good point. Senator Costello.
Thank you. And I just wanted to say for the record that I just think it's very important and critical that we understand the bill. And so whether, and you know, we're at the sectional point of the legislation, and we're now moving into parenting and policy, which, you know, we can't help because we all wear different hats here. But I just want to say I appreciate the explanation, and I think it's very important that we understand precisely what the impact is in the legislation that we have before us so that we can move on to the discussion about what is the policy call. And that's why we have so many people, you know, participating and being involved in this discussion, and I certainly appreciate that.
Okay. Excellent. Senator Wilkins.
Yeah, and just I think it's important when kids make mistakes that you correct the behavior, but the problem with this is it's not just a slap on the wrist. It's a slap on the wrist that's going to be with them for the rest of their life because it will be on out there for the whole public to look at. They're going to be 50, 60 years old applying for a job somewhere, and someone's going to look them up on CourtView, and the mistake they made when they were 14 or 15 is still going to be there, and I think it's a bad policy call from my perspective.
If I may make one more comment, Madam Chairman, I would just point, and obviously the court will make them confidential if the legislature tells us to. We have no policy position on that whatsoever. Our fallback is that things go on for court view. Every minor offense is on court view and is public. But if you tell us not to, we won't. I would like to point out that on page 81, these are the things where minors, those under 18, if they're charged with these violations, there's a whole list. They're treated as adults. And subsection 5, which is line 4 on page 81, if minors, that's the minor consuming statute, alcohol. Those are currently on court view, and I would just point out that I've heard the committee say that it wishes to treat marijuana like alcohol, so that would be something that you might take a look at.
Thank you. Thank you, Nancy.
And I guess, Madam
Chair, yes, Sir, we'll
I think it's probably time we start rethinking some of our punishments on alcohol for kids.
Yeah. Okay, thank you very much. Okay. Jordan and Amy, you want to keep walking us through? Thank you, Ms. Mead, if you can stick around. I know you're dividing yourself between the two committees. I appreciate that. And if you need to go, we can send for you. Okay, that's fantastic. Well, and it's an interesting discussion we're having, and we'll continue to have it as we make our way toward the final decision in the draft. I think Senator Coghill brings up a good point. The other point, of course, is, you know, you often will have young people who may have had fetal alcohol syndrome, for example, and are then consuming alcohol. they might be in an addiction cycle at a young age that you have a chance to divert them out of and get them on the right track. And the question is, you know, how much of that stigma do you want to follow them, and how much does it impact them positively or negatively? So those are the kinds of things that I'd like us to keep discussing. And I do think it makes sense to consider what is already on page 81 in section 5, whatever the policy decision is that we make with respect to the violations being viewed on court view. And there's a broader bill, of course, that we've discussed that's making its way through again, Senator Dyson's bill from last year. But at least in this area, I would think we'd want them both probably treated the same way, since it's minors and whatever message we're sending is similar. So, Amy and Jesse. Jordan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So continuing on to misconduct involving marijuana in the fourth degree, a person commits the crime of MIM in the fourth, which is a violation, if they are over 21 and uses any amount of marijuana in a public place. And we've left the definition of public place just for your reference, as it is already in statute. And going on, is between 18 and 20 years old and uses, displays, or possesses 1 ounce or less of marijuana.
Okay. Moving on. Questions on that? Yes, Senator Wilikowski.
Is that that will also appear on court view?
Yes. Through the chair, yes. In the next section, 1738-240, proof of registration to be exhibited on demand with a penalty. This would require a licensee to have a copy of their marijuana license at all times while transporting more than 1 ounce of marijuana, and shall present the license on demand to a police officer. And this is just to kind of help law enforcement with that, with this transportation of marijuana. Next, 1738-250, bail forfeiture for certain offenses, requires a court to make a bail schedule allowing defendants to pay the fine for violations without a court appearance. And this is for MIM 3 and 4, and that was what Nancy was just mentioning, that we can mail in that payment. 1738-260, this is where we define the aggregate weight of a live marijuana plant. For the purposes of calculating the aggregate weight of the plant, the weight shall be 1/6 the weight of the plant after the roots have been removed. And there's been a lot of debate and discussion about this and this type of weight. So, if it pleases the committee, you know, maybe we can kind of offer some of that feedback later on in testimony.
Okay. Let's just keep going through the sectional for now, and then we'll flag that as an area for differences of opinion potentially.
AS 1738-270, rehabilitation. This is for a person who's convicted of misconduct relating to the use of marijuana, may be committed to the Department of Corrections for treatment for not more than 1 year. And this actually is going to have to be removed. It doesn't apply. It was just an error.
Okay.
So that just didn't happen. 1738-280, restriction for prosecution for certain persons in connection with a marijuana overdose. This protects the person who would fear that this person that they were with was going to experience an overdose, and so they would be protected if they brought. And this might be in a case of a child or something that accidentally ate something. And 1738-290, forfeitures and seizures, provides and establishes a process for forfeiture of marijuana and other assets upon violation of 1738-230. And there is a much simpler way of putting this into law, so we would also like the opportunity to be able to read off that section.
Okay.
Or remove it altogether. It's debatable. 1738-300, affirmative defense for prosecution under AS 1738-200 through 1738-230, medical use of marijuana. This is that affirmative defense that was in Title 17 for medical use. Section 51 provides the definition of marijuana. This is the definition that was used in the ballot initiative with one amendment, we removed the word salt.
That's right.
And then some very minor stylistic.
Senator Wilkowski.
I have a question, if I could go back to Section 50. And we had in the original version of the bill, it made possession of marijuana an affirmative defense, period. And so are we saying if you're a medical marijuana user and you have an ounce, you have to prove as an affirmative defense that possession is okay?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, I believe that you wouldn't have to prove anything if you had over an ounce, possibly. And I don't really know what those limits are for medical marijuana possession or transporting. But
could I maybe get a clarification from Ms. Martin?
Yes, Ms. Martin. Did you follow Senator Wilkowski's question, or would you like him to re-ask it?
No, Senator Wilkowski, through the chair, this is the exact language that appeared previously for medical marijuana patients. It was previously defense to 1171. We simply moved it into 1738 because they don't need it in 1171 anymore. Again, a person who has less than an ounce, there's no crime associated with an ounce, so a medical marijuana patient wouldn't have a problem there. I think you have issues with when you're at possession levels above the amounts that are criminal, and then also the medical marijuana statutes allow parents to be the primary caregiver for their child and administer medical marijuana, and so this would also protect that situation.
Your question?
Okay, so just for clarity, just so I can understand it with clarity, we are saying if you have an ounce, then as a medical marijuana recipient, you do not have to prove affirmatively, be an affirmative defense that you are a medical marijuana recipient. This only applies to those sections that we just previously discussed where there could be over an ounce. Or there are other...
God. Yes. Senator Kosky, through the chair, that's correct. If there's no crime associated with possession, there's no need to have a defense, because anyone who's over 21 can have possess up to an ounce of marijuana, and so this affirmative defense simply covers the criminal,
okay.
The crime.
Thank you.
That we've created.
Okay. Yes, Senator Costello.
Thank you, and this actually might be from Nancy, who's apparently no longer here. She's in another committee, and I apologize for that. But I was curious what it looks like or what happens if somebody has an affirmative defense. So if, let's say, I have a family member who has a prescription for medical marijuana and they're pulled over, what does an affirmative defense look like? Do they just say at that particular point, or are they brought into the legal system and have to then... You know, I'm just thinking about cancer patients who already have their plate full with a lot of other things going on. Would they then have to go into the court system, or what exactly does this look like?
So let me call on Casey Schroeder. Casey, did you follow Senator Costello's question? Okay. Casey's with the Department of Law. And an affirmative defense is production and persuasion. You told us production of evidence and persuasion.
For the record, Casey Schroeder, Assistant Attorney General with the Criminal Division, Department of Law. The way the affirmative defense works is you notice it, so you let the prosecution know, I'm going to raise this affirmative defense. At trial, prosecution puts on their case, and then afterwards, the defendant gets to put on their affirmative defense. And the affirmative defense is by preponderance of the evidence, which is different than what the prosecution has to show beyond a reasonable doubt. That's the worst case scenario. I would say that through communications between counsel, before all that happens, a decision can be made whether or not to take something to trial. If the prosecutor thinks this is probably a legitimate defense, I may not want to take this to trial because I think the defense will prevail. You know, those conversations happen So that's the normal course of business. But the worst case would be at the end of trial where that's presented.
Makes sense. Well, Senator Cocco.
And for me, that travels in the same problem she has. I'm not a lawyer, or have I ever been involved in this process. There would have to be the underlying crime first, and then the affirmative defense for the medical marijuana, right?
Through the chair, Senator Coghill, that's correct.
Okay.
And I actually think that Senator Lukowski brings up a good point, and I am going to go back and take a look at that.
Right.
You know, from our perspective, the medical marijuana statutes don't provide any more protection in the criminal context than the initiative.
Yeah.
But I think that is a good point, and it's something that we should look at.
And Madam Chair, I think we have a mixed standard here because we have 1 ounce issues and 4 ounce issues that I think confuse the issue as well. So, I mean, we're going to have to look at that.
So, I think that's right. I think what you'll probably see the initiative folks arguing probably privacy with respect to medical issues and things like that. But it strikes me it would be no different than you had a shoulder surgery and you had OxyContin on your person. And the likelihood of somebody getting to that point, an attorney to charge you with the crime and prosecute and all those kinds of things, pretty low. Probably going to communicate with the person and their defense counsel, and you're going to find they have a prescription, they've just had shoulder surgery. But let's say you went all that way, you're going to be able to put on your defense that says, I just had shoulder surgery and I have OxyContin. That's why I'm possessing the drug. So, okay, thank you very much, Casey. Appreciate it. Okay, Amy and Jordan.
Okay. Moving on to Section 52, 1738-900. These are several different definitions that needed to be clarified for criminal negligence, delivery, knowingly, manufacture, marijuana concentrate, and public place.
Okay.
If I could add, Madam Chair, one thing of note here on page 39 is starting at line 11, the growing of marijuana for personal use is not a part of the definition of manufacture.
Great.
Moving on to Section 53, protective orders, eligible petitioners.
Oh, Senator Lukowski.
Section 52, defining public place, and we define it in 1181-900, and could you talk a little bit about how you selected that, and one of the things, because I know this has been a hot topic, and maybe this is an appropriate definition, I don't know, but it does include places of business, and if you could just talk a little bit about how you chose that as your definition, 1181-900.
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, there was some thought from us and the Department of Law that it would be most uniform if all of the crimes that we have on the books in Title 11, for example, if they all pointed towards the same definition. There are other crimes that where the definition of public place is relevant. But I think, and that definition that we use is fairly comprehensive, and it would probably not include things like restaurants and bars, but I think it's just purely a policy call. I think that if the committee chooses to, you could have a separate definition for public place.
Can I just ask,
yeah,
what other, would you like me to read the definition?
Because it's not in there. Sure,
okay,
absolutely.
Public place, here's the way it's defined, because this is, I think, going to be a big discussion point. Public place means a place to which the public or a substantial group of persons has access and includes highways, transportation facilities, schools, places of amusement or business, parks, playgrounds, prisons, and hallways, lobbies, and other portions of apartment houses and hotels not constituting rooms or apartments designed for actual residence. And I think probably most people would agree on the vast majority of these things. A couple of things are going to be apartment houses, businesses. And so I know there's some organizations that are looking at setting up businesses where people can go to do this. And it's a policy call. Where else is this definition used for public place?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, I'd feel more comfortable if Casey spoke about that. She probably knows which crimes link to that definition.
Thank you.
Excellent. And Casey, as you're coming up, if we could ask you as well, make your way up, with respect to alcohol, is it treated the same way? You're not allowed to use alcohol in a public place. Is alcohol use prohibited with the same definition? And then if that's so, my assumption is because it's a regulated substance, you then are allowed to use it in, quote, public places that are qualified as businesses if they're licensed. So you've sort of got a layering effect. You've got the criminal prohibition against being in a public place using this regulated substance that gets trumped then by a license that's issued to, let's say, a bar or a restaurant. And then that person, of course, can be consuming the alcohol within the confines of that. So can you...
For the record, Casey Schroeder, Criminal Division, Department of Law. I can't pull something off the top of my head that's another crime that refers to public place. There is no state law that prohibits alcohol consumption in public. That's usually an ordinance that's enacted by a local government.
Okay.
So, and I'm not sure if Title IV defines public place differently or not. I'd have to go check, but I can definitely do that.
Maybe a drafter.
Yeah. Hillary Martin, do you know?
Yeah, again, Hillary Martin with Legislative Legal Services. Title IV does not actually use public place. As Ms. Schroeder said, there's no actual state prohibition on drinking in public. It's all local ordinances. The term is used a number of times in the criminal statutes. An example is stalking in the second degree. If you approach or confront a person in a public place, and there's handful of other statutes where it's also used.
Okay, Senator Cockey.
I don't have the initiative in front of me, but I know the initiative said that it would be illegal in public. And I would have to look the exact reference, but this isn't trying to keep with what the initiative set out. And so...
Let's ask Bruce. Bruce Schulte, are you online? No, it's not yet. Okay.
Oh, thank you.
All right, well, we will keep looking at this. I agree with Senator Coghill that the initiative said no use of marijuana in a public place. We had a request from the head of the ABC board, Cynthia Franklin, to at least put in the Alaska statute definition of public place or some other definition. So we've got a placeholder here, and we'll keep talking about it.
Madam Chair, I'll just read right from the initiative. It's in the 040 section. It is unlawful to consume marijuana in public. A person who violates this section is guilty of a violation punishable by a fine up to $100. So then it was left up to us to figure out what does that mean.
There you go. Thank you. Senator Wilkowski.
Yeah, thank you. And maybe this is a question for Hillary, but part of the definition of public place includes hallways. Can you explain to me, does that mean a hallway in your house? Or what is a hallway?
Yep, Senator Lukowski through the chair. This is talking about apartment houses and hotels, not constituting rooms or apartments. So the public place would be the hallway or lobby of an apartment or a hotel, for example.
And then how about business? Is that any authorized business? Would that exclude a setting up a place where people can go and smoke at any authorized business? Would we be prohibiting that under this law?
To the chair, business is not defined for this definition. I think it likely would include marijuana establishment. There's a way, I mean, if you wanted to allow use in all establishments, that is possible. It would just require some drafting changes.
Okay. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you, Ms. Martin.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
The other question is, for example, some people, for some reasons, a car is considered public. I know we had that discussion when we were talking about concealed carry, for example. So that's going to be another question that's going to arise on what happens in a car. And if you have an open container of alcohol in a car, that could be a problem for you. If you're smoking marijuana in a car or a cigarette in a car, what does that mean? And so I think we have to kind of think about how far and how strict we want to get. Smoking a cigarette doesn't have the mind-changing effects of, say, smoking marijuana does, just like alcohol. And so I think as we go down this road, we may have to come up with our own definition just for those very reasons.
Bruce Schulte is on the line. He's joined us. Bruce, if you'd put your name and your affiliation on the record, and the question that I had for you was about the initiative and what you envisioned when you put public place in. That's one. And two, have you seen the current draft of Senate Bill 30 that includes the definition and the definition of public place that it has?
Good afternoon, Madam Chair.
Good afternoon.
Thank you. My name is Bruce Schulte. I'm with the Coalition for Responsible Cannabis Legislation. And, this question of public versus private space has come up a number of times. Let me just say, we don't dispute the fact that, public consumption of marijuana is unlawful. That's understood. And some places are obviously public. Some places are obviously private. Where it becomes a gray area, we feel is, for example, private businesses, which are readily accessible to the public, but they are actually private property run by private business owners. And we see both an opportunity here and a challenge. The opportunity is that just as you have establishments that can serve alcohol under varying circumstances and for different durations, there may also be businesses that would allow consumption of marijuana on their premises. The challenge, then, is to make that distinction. This has come up at the local level, both in Anchorage and in Mat-Su, and I've heard local officials express a desire for the state to come up with some definition that everybody can go by. So we would like to see that that definition expanded a little bit to make it a little bit more flexible.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. Schulte?
While we have you on the line, do you want to offer any additional testimony about, sort of how you're feeling about this draft and the work you've been doing it with the team and so on?
Madam Chair, I would very much like to. Thank you for the opportunity. I did submit some written notes yesterday. I'm not sure if there was time to copy them and distribute them. I won't bore you reading.
They're in our packet. Amy's assuring us.
Okay, terrific. First of all, if I may take the liberty of just acknowledging Amy and Jordan for their work. They are doing a stupendous job of developing this bill, and I really appreciate it. I've had some great conversations with them. And I would like to also just, if I may, just acknowledge Senator Costello's comment about our group's commitment to an orderly process here. We absolutely are committed to seeing this through in a manner and on the schedule defined in the initiative. I want to just hit on a couple of things in my notes. The first one has to do with, let me see here, on page 2 of my comments, item number 3, there's mention, statute number 1738-200, paragraph 4, it addresses the use of butane, basically to extract hash oil. Let me just say we wholeheartedly agree with the intent here. I mean, having people use explosive gases in an uncontrolled environment is a really bad idea. So we support the intent here. However, we think that the wording could get a little bit more precise to get at the actual problem. So we suggested a very specific reference to the use of volatile or explosive gases. And the purpose of that would be to allow for other processes using, for example, ice water or dry ice that are completely safe that a homeowner might use, or I mean a home user consumer might use to extract hash. I want to make the distinction there between hash and hash oil. They are, in fact, different products extracted through different means. So we just, with respect, we suggest some rephrasing of that sense to get at the truly dangerous activity of home extraction using butane, which we support. And I think that that would resonate well with a lot of local communities that are trying to address that problem. Let me see. Moving on to the next page, page 3, item number 4, there's a reference where it defines a class of misdemeanor for anyone selling marijuana to someone who is under 21. again, we totally support the intent there. What is interesting to note, though, is that the rewrite to Title 24, when referencing alcohol, actually moves that kind of violation, that kind of transgression from a criminal violation to a regulatory violation. So I realize that the Title 24 rewrite is not before the legislature yet, but there might be an opportunity here to bring the rules for marijuana into line with the eventual rules for alcohol, if that makes sense. And so if somebody's working in a retail store, they sell marijuana, somebody's under 21, intentionally or unintentionally, would become a regulatory infraction rather than a criminal act. Next, with regard to the aggregate weight of live marijuana plants, we feel that this section should be omitted simply because there's nowhere in statute where everywhere else in statute limitations are expressed as either a number of plants or a weight of harvested product. We feel that this section is a little bit ominous because it basically requires one to destroy the plant to ascertain the weight. And if that was done in a commercial setting, that could amount to tens of thousands of dollars of inventory. So unless there's a specific need to have this in here, we would suggest removing it. On the next page, Section 50, AS 1738-290, forfeiture and seizures. With respect, Madam Chair, when I saw this, my head almost exploded, because the whole issue of forfeiture and seizures around the country has been such an issue, and unfortunately it's been abused, not as much in Alaska, but elsewhere, and occasionally in Alaska. However, that said, we recognize that this more or less mimics the terminology in the corresponding statutes for alcohol. So, that said, we'd like to respectfully request that if this section is included, and perhaps that is appropriate, perhaps it would be appropriate for the legislature to note that their intent is for property or funds seized under this law to be used for drug education and treatment programs. That way it removes any incentive for abuse of this law in seizing and in arresting people and seizing their property. Just something for consideration. Next item, again on this page, for item number 7, I'll just hit this briefly. This had come up very early on in the discussion, the inclusion of the word salt in the definitions, and if I may, I would like to thank Senator Cogdill for raising this. I had to do quite a bit of research to get at the heart of this question, and having done that, and now that I understand how salt ends up in this definition, we would wholeheartedly support removing it as an appropriate grammatical correction, because it really has no context, no meaning in the context of the marijuana industry. On the next page, we spoke a little bit about public place. I don't want to labor that point. I think everybody kind of understands the issue there. And my comment number 9 is essentially the same thing. I'll just move on to page 6 then. My comment number 10, with regard to the repeal of the voter initiative sections 020 and 030, this has become a point of discussion. And when I first looked at it, I thought, well, I can see how the drafters would feel that omitting section 020 was appropriate because corresponding language had been included elsewhere under section 200, where it defines penalties for infractions of different sorts. However, on further reflection, I feel that it's important to maintain both of these sections in their entirety. And I don't think that they're actually in conflict or even redundant. It's our view that 1738, 020, and 030, since they were in fact in the voter initiative, they are in fact what the voters were asking for. And we feel that you could view these as stating what is lawful, whereas the new sections 200 state the penalties for activities that are unlawful. So if one looks at it that way, we feel that these are actually complementary and therefore should not, don't necessarily need to be repealed. And because of the tremendous protection offered by this section, we respectfully request that those sections be maintained in entirety. I think that is pretty much it in terms of my summation. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Senator Coghill.
Ms. Fuller. I wish I had something as simple as the word salt to deal with, but thank you for the compliment anyway. So we're starting to figure out these misconduct penalties, and so you can have a misconduct that is a third degree, let's just say on page 31 and 32, section 220. It says here that the possession of 1 ounce and less than 4 ounces, and from your perspective, I'm looking at the definition of marijuana, that could actually be 1 ounce of oil derivative, if I understand correctly. Do you understand that right? That way?
Through the chair, Senator Caldwell, I would have to concede that could be one interpretation. That said, 1 ounce of hash oil would be a tremendously valuable thing to have in one's possession. I would concede that could be one interpretation.
Yes, and that would...
I'm not sure how often someone would actually have that quantity of hash oil, except in a commercial transaction, for example, with a commercial facility manufacturing edibles.
I understand that, but under the definition, that's going to be argued somewhere along the line, and at this point, we've made it simply a ticket, basically, and that does get me concerned. And so, I think as we move through this, we need to ask ourselves over and over and over again. There's one thing to have an ounce in a baggie, and there's another to have an ounce of oil or cake or whatever derivatives. And I think as we go through this, I would ask you to help us understand. You know, when we say an ounce or less or an ounce or more, I just have not been able to get my head around what does that mean under this definition. So whatever you can do to help us understand that, or do we need to divide it up and make it so that under certain conditions we will make it either a misdemeanor or an honest goodness high-level crime if the value is certain value. But I think most of us understand the plant issue. I kind of get that. I even understand the dried plant issue. But all the derivatives from the oil to the cakes, I don't understand how to value those under the definitions that we're putting penalties on. So have you thought that through?
Through the chair, Senator Caldwell, that is a terrific observation. I have given that some thought. I'm not prepared to offer clarification on that right this moment, but I would accept that challenge and that opportunity to do so. It's interesting to note, I'll just offer a personal observation, the industry has changed remarkably since I was in high school, and that was several decades ago, and the preferred form of consumption has in fact moved from leaf and flower to these concentrates, not just for medical users, but you know, retail consumers of other types. So that is the market. I understand your concern and the question, and we will endeavor to offer some recommendations on there that might speak to your question. I think I do understand the concern. We'll work on that.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, and I look forward to that because we've heard vaporizing, it's like vape cigarettes. We've heard hash oil. We've heard cakes and those types of things. And so that's going to help me because we are now trying to talk about penalties with these ounces, and I don't know what these ounces mean. So thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you, Bruce. Any further questions on that subject? Okay. Keep going, Bruce.
Okay. I didn't have any further comments other than just to say, if I haven't said it before, I will say that our group is committed to an orderly process here. You know, we recognize that February 24th, that just changes personal consumption and cultivation. We're looking forward to a 9-month regulatory process and another 3 months after that before the state starts to accept permits. So we're not expecting to see, you know, commercial or retail businesses go into effect until sometime in 2016, spring or summer 2016, and that's what our members are committed to. That's the message we are trying to get out there, and we are endeavoring to get that out to the general public too between now and the 24th. So whatever we can do to help clarify things as that date approaches, we will do.
Thank you for that, Bruce. And I was going to ask that question, if your group might be helpful
in all of our hearings, we've tried to make it clear that on the 24th, that if you're not in front of a licensed establishment buying from a licensed in Alaska marijuana retailer, then you're breaking the law, and nothing changed between the 23rd and the 24th. It's just the possession of the 1 ounce. But I wonder, you mentioned that you were already looking at some efforts, what those are, and how you might help us communicate with the public so that we just don't have, as you said, an orderly transition in all this.
Madam Chair, thanks for that. Specifically, we intend to message that through social media. There's a number of people that follow us on Facebook, and well, most of them, I think, are already sort of on board and understand this. In addition, it's my intent to offer some letters to the editor in any large community that's willing to accept it. And my goal there is to articulate exactly what is lawful as of February 24th and what will not be lawful for the, 9 to 14 months thereafter. Again, we want to see this done right. We don't want to see negative publicity brought to this industry by people jumping the gun. And we're totally open to any suggestions on further messaging that we can undertake.
All right, that's excellent. I will think of some more, and other members, feel free to contact Bruce or in the next hearing Friday when he's here if you've got ideas. And I always refer your name to the media as somebody who can, do outreach as well. Senator Coghill had a point or a question.
Just a suggestion. Maybe there are ways that you can help us with the definition based on value statements. I don't know that. But when you said carrying around an ounce of hash oil probably would be very different value-wise, and maybe that's a way we have to look at it. But because we do pretty much the same thing on alcohol, if it has different levels of proof, certainly we have had some value statements on alcohol, so it might be something you can help us with.
Okay,
Chair, Senator, I welcome that, and I will take the opportunity to help with that clarification as far as I can.
Excellent. Well, with that, we'll go ahead and adjourn on time, and we'll Tracy Wallenberg with the Public Defender Agency will take you up first on Friday, and we'll have the bill back before us, and there's a lot of work going on, with the team on the drafting, and I appreciate that. So with that, we're adjourned.